It's 19:30 UTC on Thursday, January 4th, and this is Zimbabwe Today.
I think in as much as it's good to have investment, there are some services that we need government overlooking those, for example, transport.
That was a young Zimbabwean talking about the government's plan to sell stakes in some of state-owned enterprises. We'll have much more on that story and others coming up.
Good evening, I'm Chidonjere.
And I'm Kudzelai Mutetwa on VOA's Zimbabwe Today.
Zimbabwe's new administration is under pressure to make the country's economy work. Its latest plan is to privatize some of the state-owned companies that have been losing money and in turn bleeding the national treasure. Reporter Kudzai Nawashe speaks to young Zimbabweans to get their thoughts on the new policy.
Among the state-owned companies, or parastatals, that the government would like to sell are the National Airline and the National Railways of Zimbabwe, or NRZ, as well as the country's supplier of electricity. Munyaradzi Dodo, a young Zimbabwean, says it was a long time coming.
I think it's long overdue for some parastatals such as Air Zimbabwe, NRZ. Those have been mismanaged for a long time.
Dodo adds, the move may reflect failure, but it's a good move nonetheless.
I think for others, it's a sign that the government has failed to manage its work and doesn't really know how to operate viable entities, and you just leave that to the private sector. I think it's a good move in general.
Tino Muzavazi is an entrepreneur. He says the move will help government focus on top priorities.
It will actually give them more time to actually focus on trying to create policies that create conducive environments for actually businesses to start investing, which is what they're supposed to be doing, not running companies.
Michael Zimoyo, a tertiary student at a local university, agrees it is a step in the right direction. But he says government should retain oversight of certain sectors of the economy.
I think in as much as it's good to have investment, there are some services that we need government overlooking those, for example, transport. You cannot necessarily privatize all that. You still need government to be able to overlook.
He says another alternative would be for government to sell stakes in the parastatals to private interests, yet still retain the controlling power. Critics say the new policy should help attract foreign investment and turn these businesses into profit-making entities. They say investors want to make money, so weeding out corruption in the government-run companies should also be high in the agenda. For VOA, this is Kudzai Nawashe from Harare.
Most of the companies the Zimbabwean government plans to sell off have lost money for years. By selling them, President Emmerson Mnangagwa hopes to aid his goal of economic revitalization. I spoke with Monica DeBole, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute for International Economics. She says that privatizing state-owned companies alone won't necessarily rescue a shattered economy.
So there are two arguments for privatizing. Mm. One is, you know, when you have a country that's dominated by state-owned enterprises, you generally have a situation where there is a lot of inefficiency in the system. Sometimes there's a lot of corruption too. And, you know, things simply don't function properly. So the key argument for privatizing in this context is, you know, you hand over to the private sector, those companies and those, you know, the companies operating in those sectors where the private sector has a better handle on how to conduct business operations than the government does. And in principle, though that's not always the case, but in principle that will bring some efficiency back, and those sectors will operate more efficiently, as well as, and that's the part that's not always the case, sometimes it helps in fighting off corruption too, although, as I just said, that's not always the case. So that's sort of the main argument for privatizing. The problem is that a lot of countries, when they're faced with extremely difficult circumstances, especially if they're faced with a fiscal crunch where they desperately need revenues to cover, you know, fiscal problems, they end up selling state assets and state-owned enterprises, and so that becomes the reason for privatization. The problem with conducting, you know, a big privatization effort in the face of a very big fiscal problem is that often what will happen is that some of those companies are going to be sold at fire sale prices, so that ultimately the kind of revenue that you can actually raise from these operations isn't anywhere near what the government usually expects. So usually it falls way short of what the government needs.
Are there any countries that have successfully leveraged privatization in terms of revitalizing an economy?
There are. Brazil in the 1990s, for example, is one such case. So at the time, the reason why the government privatized a lot of state-owned companies and even state-owned financial institutions was twofold. On the one hand, there was a plan, there was a big structural push for privatization that had more to do with, you know, transforming the economy, bringing back efficiency, and so on and so forth. So, you know, the sort of traditional argument that you would see attached to privatization. But there was also the need to, raise revenue because the government at the time was facing a fiscal crunch. But the plans that were put in place and the way by which the government went about selling some of these state-owned enterprises ended up being fairly successful. So the key to this sort of success, I mean, the way that this sort of success actually happens is that, you know, you have to make sure that the assets that you're selling off and the companies that you're selling off are actually viable in mm-hmm. the medium term and are actually attractive in terms of, you know, generating profits and so on for whomever is interested in buying this.
That was Monica DeBoel at the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington, speaking with me earlier today.
A court in Zimbabwe set aside charges against a U.S. citizen accusing her of subversion and undermining the authority of former President Robert Mugabe. As Sebastian Mofu reports from Harare, the court acted after prosecutors failed to set a trial date.
No comment right now, guys.
Thank you.
That is all Martha O'Donovan said to reporters outside the Harare Magistrate Court on Thursday. Just a little bit earlier, Magistrate Rumbidzai Mugwagwa had said this to the U.S. citizen. Further remand is denied. The state can follow by way of summons. She was arrested in early November last year on charges of subversion and undermining the authority of now ousted President Robert Mugabe after allegedly tweeting that the 93-year-old was a selfish and sick man. She denied both charges. She spent a week at Zimbabwe's maximum prison before being released on $1,000 bail. Obey Shava from Zimbabwe Lawyers for Human Rights is representing the 25-year-old American and spoke to reporters after the court ruling Thursday.
In the first place, there was no case, so something which they called a state, a case, is crumbled today, and we are quite glad that the court honored its promise. It removed our client from remand, and we are happy because of that outcome.
When O'Donovan last appeared in court in December, the judge promised to remove her from the court role unless she was finished with her trial date, which prosecutors did not do Thursday. However, under Zimbabwean laws, the state can summon her to court should it come up with a trial date, but all her bail conditions have been removed. O'Donovan works for Magamba TV, a small company that produces what it calls political satire and comedy programming. Just a few weeks after she was arrested, the military took control of the government, leading Mugabe to resign. His former vice president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, replaced him as president. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
vatereri ve Studio 7 tunoda kukuzivisai kuti tava nezvimwe zvirongwa zvakatanga zvatichange tichikupakurirai kubva na 6 a.m. kuseni kwega kwega na 2 p.m. masikati ega ega nechirongwa chenyu chamagaro ziva cha 7 p.m. mazuva ose. Munokwanisa kutibata pa 909 medium wave frequency, pa 4930 short wave, 15580 short wave, ne 6080 short wave mazuva ose. Musakangana kuti tichangezve tichitepfenyura pa Facebook page yedu ye VOA Shona. Kana musati mafarira Facebook page yedu, ibvai maenda ikoko motsvaga pakanzi like mubva matifarira. Tokuyeuchidzai zvakare zvirongwa izvi zvinenge zvichiitwa na 6 a.m., 2 p.m. na 7 p.m. manheru ega ega. Musakanganwe.
The Zimbabwe Electoral Commission has extended the biometric voter registration blitz for another month. Starting next week, for those who missed the registration in December will get another chance, and social media users largely welcome the news.
Simbarasha says it's good news to those who couldn't register within the previous four phases. However, much disappointment to the unpaid voter registration officers.
Elia says, brilliant, and political parties will have no one to blame if they do not seize this last opportunity and encourage their supporters to go and register for the division election.
Mantate says, go and register.
Henry Muusha says, well done, Zek, but it's all up to us to take full advantage of this other extension.
Loveness Murindi says, good job, because I am one of the people who hasn't registered yet.
Frankie says, let's see how many people will come.
Although it has some of the best natural attractions in the world, Zimbabwe's tourism sector has suffered over the years, partly due to Western sanctions because of allegations of human rights abuses by former President Robert Mugabe. But the new government is renewing hope for the sector. Correspondent Taurai Shava brings us more from Victoria Falls.
At a coffee shop by the main entrance to the Victoria Falls, Het Smal sits with his wife, admiring the pictures on the camera they are holding. Het, a South African, has just finished a mid-morning tour of the Victoria Falls, one of the world's most famous tourist attractions. He last visited in February 2017. That trip was before the dramatic change that occurred in Zimbabwe's politics last November when the military took control of the government and pushed out former President Robert Mugabe. Pret is reluctant to discuss politics, but says he followed events in his country's northern neighbor. Although he thinks it's too early to say, he feels that the developments augur well for Zimbabwe's future.
I think everything is going to open up now, and even some of the white farmers are getting their farms back. Yeah, it's the same as South Africa, you know. What we work for is to make Africa a place for everybody. You know, so we have to work together, and still a lot of work behind the scenes that we must do. But if everybody has Africa at heart and want to be part of Africa, we all have to work incredibly hard to make it work.
Another tourist, Brett Hawkins, is based in South Africa, but has a family and friends who live in Zimbabwe. He says they have told him that they believe the recent changes give the country better prospects. Brett has visited Victoria Falls countless times and says his own experience during this visit makes him share that hope. Brett's friend, another South African who chose to identify himself only as X-Cross, was among those visiting the falls for the first time during the festive season. He had booked the trip before the political drama unfolded and almost cancelled for fear of problems. He's glad he didn't.
As it was happening, we've been following it, trying to see if it was a good idea. Should we unbook? Should we choose another destination? But everything has been excellent since we came here. Everything has been wonderful. It's my first time in Zimbabwe. It's my first time in Victoria Falls. If I can summarize it, Victoria Falls is the place to be in Zimbabwe.
A Zimbabwean who only identified himself as Ngwenya has been running a curio shop in Victoria Falls town since 2010. That was the year the government decided to use a basket of currencies, including the United States dollar and the South African rand, after hyperinflation had decimated Zimbabwe's currency. Ngwenya says he believes the new government, led by President Emmerson Mnangagwa, is already bringing about positive change. He says under Mugabe, Zimbabwe had become a pariah state, but he thinks foreigners are becoming more interested in visiting, especially Victoria Falls.
I'm seeing a lot of changes and I'm meeting different people from different places actually commenting to what has happened. It's showing this is worldwide. Everyone visiting here is visiting for a purpose, to see what this place looks like. You know, some people from different places were being told different news, you know, about our country, of which some people could not come here because of reasons that were not even true.
Government figures show that 2.1 million tourists visited Zimbabwe in 2016, up from 2.06 million the previous year. The arrivals earned the country $890 million, about 8% of the gross domestic product, or GDP. Tourism's contribution to the GDP peaked at 21% in 2008, before falling to a low of 7% in 2010. By 2007, the world's leading airlines, including British Airways, Australia's Qantas, and Germany's Lufthansa, had ended flights to Harare because of perceived high political risk. Ngwenya thinks the new government will better his business prospects and those of the country at large.
Things are looking better in terms of my sales. It's even changing because at least people are getting in, even though they don't buy. But, you know, it's always nice in business that you find some people asking prices, asking for this and that, even if I have the thing or I do not have. But, you know, just having some people to talk to different people, it's actually nice.
Kent Davies is a manager with a company that offers adventure activities such as bungee jumping and whitewater rafting, as well as boat cruises on the Zambezi River. Since opening in 1982, the company has grown to include accommodation and restaurant services. Davies says despite Zimbabwe's years of economic problems, his business kept going because it concentrated on offering good service. And he says the reputation of Zimbabweans as hard-working and peace-loving people is very helpful for the tourism sector.
We've just focused on doing what we think we can do well, because we know that the asset that Zimbabwe has is too great, and that eventually all will come equal and things will work out better. Whatever the reality was on the ground, even in the, what everyone would say, probably the worst of times, tourists were never affected. And that's our business. Our business is tourism. They were never affected. They never really were ever under any threat, ever faced them. They just came here and they had great hospitality from all Zimbabweans, who were always incredibly friendly to them.
With the new government pledging to turn around the economy, visitors and tourism businesses are hoping for better times. Reporting for VOA from Victoria Falls in Zimbabwe, this is Taurai Shawa.
You're listening to Zimbabwe Today, live from Voice of America, Studio 22. I'm Chidonjere in Washington, D.C. At 47 past the hour, we continue with more news. The border between Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea has been sealed for nearly 2 weeks because of the alleged coup attempt against Equatorial Guinea President Teodoro Obiang Nguema. Merchants on the border say the closure is costing them business. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the border town of Kiosis.
It is a relatively quiet atmosphere here at Kiosi, a town in southern Cameroon that borders Gabon and Equatorial Guinea. The town is normally a conduit for farm produce, beverages and other goods being trucked across the borders. But Cameroonian businessman Fidel Kemenye says activity has been at a standstill since the border was sealed, and Kemenye himself has been stuck in Equatorial Guinea for nearly 2 weeks. He says when they were returning from work on December 24 at about 4 p.m., they discovered that the military from Equatorial Guinea had blocked entry into their country. He says they thought it was a temporary move to control the huge number of people crossing over for end-of-year festivities, but that they have not reopened the border since then. Cameroonian food merchant Abdou Fayou is waiting for the border to reopen so his trucks can come back for more supplies.
They're not coming, the Equatorial Guinean, because they have the problem of security. No any passengers from the 23 to now.
Equatorial Guinean businesswoman Falamu Fatuma says the border closure is preventing her from making deliveries. She says since the border was sealed on December 24, she has not been able to do business and the goods she provides to her customers are perishing and she will not be able to refund their money. On December 29, Equatorial Guinea said it had arrested people on the border in possession of rocket launchers, rifles, and a stockpile of ammunition. It said the men planned to destabilize the government of President Teodoro Obiang, who has led the country since 1979 and is the longest-serving leader in Africa. Cameroon said it arrested 40 heavily armed men on the border and has strengthened security along the 290-kilometer boundary. Félix Ngelengele, governor of Cameroon's south region, says Cameroonians should be vigilant as soldiers are there to assure their security and safety in case of any attacks.
Le commandant d'armes de la place a pris des mesures.
He says the military has taken measures to rigorously check movements on the border between Cameroon and Equatorial Guinea, and surveillance measures have been intensified. He says there is an alert of insecurity from neighboring Equatorial Guinea, but that they are assuring the population that the situation is under control. Obiang, who is 75, was elected to a fifth seven-year term in 2016 in polls the opposition said were rigged in his favor. His country is one of sub-Saharan Africa's biggest oil producers, but a large proportion of its 1.2 million people live in poverty. In 2004, mercenaries attempted to overthrow Obiang in a coup thought to be largely funded by British financiers. Last week, Obiang said a war is being prepared against his regime, allegedly because of his length of time in power. Moki Edwin Kinzuka for VOA News, Kiosi, Southern Cameroon.
News reports that Ethiopian Prime Minister Hailemariam Desalegn pledged to free all political prisoners appear to have misstated his message. Translations of his comments yesterday showed that Desalegn actually said the government would review the cases of certain individuals affiliated with political parties, including party leaders who have been charged with crimes. He also said that in some cases, charges would be dropped or people would be released or pardoned, depending on what an investigation reveals. He apparently never used the words political prisoners. It appears that the government does plan to close Meykalawi, a notorious prison facility. Ethiopia has been accused of human rights abuses, including mass arrests to stifle opposition and torturing prisoners in Meykalawi and other facilities. It is not immediately clear how many prisoners were held in Meykalawi. Ethiopian political activists had welcomed yesterday's report, but had expressed doubts that all prisoners would be freed or that rights abuses in prisons would end. Ethiopia has been hit by numerous anti-government protests over the past 2 years, which began in the Oromia and Amhara regions and then spread nationwide.
Patients in African hospitals are twice as likely to die after surgery than on average globally. VOA's Steve Baragona reports on new study.
About 1% of surgery patients in Africa die of complications. That's compared to 0.5% on average worldwide.
It's really concerning when you see how high the mortality is in Africa, considering that, you know, the patients are generally fit. And they're having a lot more minor surgeries.
University of Cape Town Professor Bruce Picard and a group of colleagues gathered mortality data from 247 hospitals in 25 African countries, from Algeria to Madagascar. Their findings, published in the journal The Lancet, reveal a severe shortage of African surgeons, obstetricians, and anesthesiologists.
We're between 20 and 50 times lower than what we would consider a global minimum for providing safe surgery.
Most of the patients who died did not do so on the operating table, but in the days following surgery, he adds.
We're actually failing to recognize patients who are having complications in the postop period, and so a minor complication actually ends up becoming a major complication.
But Picard says that offers an opportunity for improvement.
We can develop a risk calculator that will tell us before surgery which patients we think are going to get into trouble.
His group is planning a study in 2019 to see if they can reduce patient deaths by focusing limited resources on patients at the highest risk. Steve Barragona, VOA News, Washington.
Njani mahlabe zulu linjani zulu kandaba sifisa ukulibikela ukuthi silethulela indaba ezimqotho ngeZimbabwe suku zonke ngo 6 am 2 pm la 7 pm eZimbabwe lisibamba kumagagasi athi 909 meter wave 4930 15580 la ku 6080 shortwave frequencies lila kunjalo ukusithola ebulenjini bokuzilibazisa ku Facebook ukhasi lethule VOA Ndebele. Land of
sunshine. Football legends are gathering in Accra tonight when the Federation of African Football announces its annual awards. There are two top awards for players, the African Footballer of the Year worldwide and the Player of the Year based in Africa. In addition, there are awards for the top teams and for the top female players. The three candidates for the African Footballer of the Year award are Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang from Gabon, who plays for Borussia Dortmund in Germany. Senegal's Sadio Mane, who plays for Liverpool, and his Egyptian teammate Mohamed Salah. Last year's Footballer of the Year was Algeria's Riyad Mahrez, who plays for Leicester City in Britain. Liberia's new president, George Weah, is a previous winner and will be at tonight's events.
That was Maeva Dikondo by Coco Master. That is it for us this evening on VOA Zimbabwe Today. I'm Chidondere.
And I'm Kutsunai Mutetwa. We'll be back again tomorrow at 9:30 p.m. Zimbabwe time for the latest news and analysis in English. VOA Shona and Dabela broadcasts can be heard at 7 a.m., 2 p.m., and 7 p.m. Zimbabwe time.
Stay with us around the clock on Facebook at Studio 7, VOA Ndebele, and VOA Shona, as well as our VOA website, www.studio7news.com.